Well, it's been about 5 or 6 years since I was with you all, but I spent a weekend with you up in, was it Auburn where we were at a campsite? Or up Auburn? Yeah. And we had a whole weekend. My family went with, my children Monica and Isaac and my husband John. You probably might remember, some of you, a little bit, my kids. My daughter Monica is bleach blonde. And then my son Isaac is just a little wild. So some of you might have gotten experienced that. I know Polly never lets me forget how wild my son is. I thought of you last weekend, too, because last weekend I was up at Whitworth College in Spokane. It's a private Presbyterian liberal arts school. Have any of you heard of it? Spokane? Whitworth College in Spokane? You've heard of it? Yeah, I thought of you all because I just see how you have a lot of young people. How many of you are in junior high and high school? Junior high and high school? Yeah? Yeah? Going to go to college? Yeah? Yeah? It'd be a great choice. A great Presbyterian school, and they give good scholarship money. And after the UC hike, let me tell you, if your kid gets good grades, it's less than a UC. Anyway, Whitworth, I recommend it to you. I thought of you all here. I thought, gosh, I could see some of the Cornerstone kids here. Beautiful campus and a great spiritual emphasis in the education. I was really impressed. Anyway, we're looking at Genesis 12, blessed to be a blessing. And as we begin the sermon, I'm going to ask you to think about what it means to be a part of a different group. Lately in my household, my son Isaac has been thinking about the question, what does it mean to be an Allen? Because he's 15 years old now, and that's part of his self-identity, is being an Allen. So he's been into these little clips about what it means to be an Allen. He'll say what it means to be an Allen is to be a foodie, because the Allens are known as foodies. And he'll ridicule how we'll sit at a whole dinner and spend half the meal talking about the food. The presentation, the flavors, if we're at home, what went into the cooking, what could have improved it. We are indeed foodies. We are also Tolkienites. If we haven't seen the Lord of the Ring trilogy and gotten out our DVDs, we start to go through withdrawal. And we have to get them out. Let's get them out and watch them all in one night. And we read them too. Any of you read the Lord of the Ring trilogy? You read them? Awesome book. We'll read them too. Well, more John, my husband. He's read them probably 12, 15 times. And when we see him rereading them, we're like, not again? You're reading the Lord of the Rings again? We're Tolkienites, big fans. What does it mean to be a Marine? I like to go to movies. If you've seen movies lately in one of our local AMC theaters, you know what it means to be a Marine, do you not? From the advertisements at the beginning, it means to live a life of excitement and save children from burning homes and always be on an adventure and twirling a really cool gun and wearing a really cool outfit and go from one high-paced adventure to another. You seen that commercial? That's what it means to be a Marine, according to the AMC movie theater. Well, what does it mean to be the church? And dialed back a bit, what does it mean to be the people of God? That's the question we're looking at today. Starting with Genesis 12, we see God begin to unpack the question of what does it mean to be the people of God? Because we see God first forming a special people of God here in Genesis 12, and then God continues to work with this people of God throughout Scripture. In Genesis 1 through 11, before our passage today in Genesis 12, God creates the world, God creates all human beings, and then you know the story, human beings fell from the goodness that God created and sin entered the world. And then Genesis 1 through 11 is a story about how sin gets bigger and bigger and bigger. First Cain kills Abel. And then we have the flood with Noah. And then we end in Genesis 11 with the Tower of Babel, a story of how human and sin affected so that people couldn't even communicate anymore. And they wanted to build a tower to heaven, and God crushed that attempt to be like God. And then we end with a cliffhanger. What is God going to do with this earth? And what God is going to do is create a people called the people of God. And here in Genesis 12, God begins to create that people by calling one person and his wife and his family group named Abram. This question might have not been the one that you came to worship with this afternoon. What does it mean to be the people of God? It was probably not the question on Abram's mind when God first came to him long ago. Actually, the question that was on Abram's mind long ago when God first encountered him was this: what future do I have, given that my wife and I are barren? See, right from the beginning, God chose his people from amongst people who are hopeless and barren. So first we see that God, what it means to be the people of God, is to be a people blessed in the midst of despair. We read in Genesis 15 that Abraham and Sarah have no children. Genesis 12, God comes to a family in the midst of their childless state, their barrenness. In the ancient Near East, to be barren is a symbol of absolute and utter hopelessness. Barren land, barren wombs, whether human or livestock, in the ancient Near East meant to have no chance of survival in their nomadic culture. And surely the emptiness of a barren womb was as despairing for a couple in Abraham's day as it is for couples in our day. It is to this barren couple that God first comes, and this is the couple that God uses to begin the people of God. God starts with people who are experiencing despair and hopelessness. What in your life is hopeless? Perhaps we don't have barren land, barren livestock in our modern, postmodern world, but we have diminished stock portfolios. Oh, some painful laughter out there. Joblessness, divorce, any number of things that create hopelessness for us in our life. The call of God comes to those who experience loss, hopelessness, despair, and a longing for new hope. So first, it means to be the people of God, people who God calls even in the midst of our hopelessness. Second, it means to be a people who are blessed in the midst of that hopelessness, to be a blessing. Genesis 12 reads, "I will bless you, and all peoples on the earth will be blessed through you." God's call to this barren couple comes with a promise that they would be blessed. The barren ones would once again find hope. They would have a son. That son would have many descendants. Those descendants would become a nation, and that nation would be Israel, known as the people of God. This Genesis 12 story is a foreshadowing of two things. And the first thing it's a foreshadowing of, and hang with me, because this is going to strike you as bizarre, it's a foreshadowing of the resurrection. It was a foreshadowing of the way the gospel was going to work. Because the gospel works by death and resurrection, hopelessness and new life. God comes to these hopeless people in the midst of the death of barrenness, no child for them, and God calls them into new life. The new life of this blessing, the promise of the child, comes with a commissioning. The blessings of God's people carried with it the potential that all people of the earth would be blessed. Israel did not always get that commissioning right. The rest of the Old Testament is a story about how sin got in the way, how they tended to like the blessed part more than the being a blessing to all peoples of the earth. They kind of liked the "we're the special people" part more than the "we are conduit of God's blessing to others." Like Israel, the 21st century church struggles to get this right, too. We like the blessing part. We tend to shy away from the "blessed to be a blessing to those people outside of the church" part. Like Abraham and Sarah, we are blessed by God, particularly in our places of despair and hopelessness. And then we, as hopeless ones are commissioned to bring that hope to other hopeless ones in the world. What does it mean to be the people of God? It means to be people of despair who find hope, who are a conduit of that blessing, that hope, to all people outside of our church and our family. And then third, it means to be a people called by God and sent out on a journey. God says to Abram, "Leave your country, your people, your father's house, and go to the land I will show you." Abraham left, and he is mentioned throughout the Bible as a model of faith for his faithful leaving, his faithful responding to God's call to be sent out on a journey. Genesis 12 begins a metaphor that continues throughout Scripture, the metaphor of the life of faith as a journey. The people of God are formerly those without hope who now have hope, and that hope gives them courage to go out on the journey of faith. The journey takes them out into the unknown, and that's okay. Like Abraham went out into the unknown of the ancient Near East. This passage is also a foreshadowing, not just of the resurrection and how new life comes out of death, but a foreshadowing of Jesus' disciples. Abraham was a prototype of the disciples of Christ. For as Abraham forsook all and left his people, his country, his father's household, so the Jesus disciples, they forsook. They left their nets. They left their families. They left their failed career as a zealot. And they went off to follow Jesus. They did not live for themselves, but they were blessed to be a blessing to others. They did not live just for their own clan, but they were a blessing to all the peoples on the earth. And disciples and apostles like Paul heard a commission to go out from his clan, the Jews, to the clan of the Gentiles. Abraham went on a journey out into the unknown. I love the Tolkien stories. I've already told you that what it means to be an Allen is to be a Tolkienite. And one of the things I like about Tolkien's stories is that they are written out of his deep Christian faith. In fact, many people don't know, but C.S. Lewis, one of our most revered Christian authors here in America, became a Christian through the witness and testimony of Tolkien. They were professors together. Tolkien was a bit older. And he shared his faith over many years with C.S. Lewis, the skeptic. And he became a Christian through Tolkien. And Tolkien novels are all about journeys. If you've read, how many of you read any of his novels? Okay, a few. They're all about journeys, journeys with a purpose, journeys to serve a larger good, journeys that take people out of their comfortable unknown and thrust them into the unknown. In the beginning of the Lord of the Rings trilogy, Frodo has no choice but to journey away from his beloved Shire. And he does so because he inherited a ring from his uncle. And this ring that he inherited from his uncle really belongs to the evil Lord Sauron. And so he cannot keep this powerful evil ring in the Shire. He's told to travel on and take it to the elves. And the elves will know what to do with this powerful evil ring that Lord Sauron is now looking for. And he thinks that the elves are as far as he's going on his journey because he really didn't want to leave. Hobbits are famous for never wanting to leave the Shire. The elves sponsor a meeting about the ring, what to do, and they invite the humans and the hobbits and the dwarfs and the elves, and they all have a meeting. Kind of reminds me like a Presbyterian session meeting. They all come together and try to discuss what's to be done about this big problem, the evil ring. And as they're there, Frodo, who thought Rivendell, where the elves live, was as far as he was going to go, heard a call and decided to follow the call, to take the ring where it needed to go, whatever it took, whatever it cost, and there were many costs involved. So I have a clip for you, because you have to see Frodo answering this call, and I think it was Tolkien's way of rewriting the call of Abraham at the council in Rivendell.
The ring cannot be destroyed, Gimli, son of Glóin, by any craft we here possess. The ring was made in the fires of Mount Doom. Only there can it be unmade. It must be taken deep into Mordor and cast back into the fiery chasm from whence it came. One of you must do this.
One does not simply walk into Mordor. Its black gates are guarded by more than just orcs. There is evil there that does not sleep. And the great eye is ever watchful. It is a barren wasteland, riddled with fire and ash and dust. The very air you breathe is a poisonous fume. Not with 10,000 men could you do this. It is folly.
Have you heard nothing Lord Elrond has said? The ring must be destroyed.
And I suppose you think you're the one to do it.
And if we fail, what then? What happens when Sauron takes back what is his?
I will be dead before I see the ring in the hands of an elf.
Well,
to my door. No one must come out.
I will take the ring to Mordor.
Possible to separate you even when he is summoned to a secret council and you are not.
Wait! We're coming too! That's going to go tied up in a sack to suffer.
Anyway, you need people of intelligence on this sort of mission. Quest. Thank you.
What that means you have.
You shall be the Fellowship of the Ring.
It's one of the greatest lines of literature. I will take the ring, but I do not know the way. Such as God is looking for us, people who say, I will follow the call of Christ. I will go out into the world to be a blessing, though I do not know the way. I do not always know the way to share the love of Christ. I do not always know how to encounter people out in the world. But I will go. Frodo left the Shire. The disciples left home and family. What is it that Abraham left? God told him to leave family, country, his father's household. He left his country, his nationality. He left his people, his sense of culture. He left his father's household, which in the ancient Near East meant to leave the protection of that greater extended clan. It would be a nomadic journey now, but eventually it would be a more settled one. The promise of land was there, but it was way off. Abraham would never experience that promise of the land. We studied this passage a few weeks ago at Emmanuel, where I serve, and one woman said this. She said, the journey of Abraham and the call of Christ's disciples today, it's not a sprint. It's more like a marathon, when you think about it. A sprint is a quick race. It's a burst of energy, and then it's over, instant gratification and victory. But a marathon lasts a long time. It tests the runner's perseverance. Victory is a ways off. Gratification is delayed. The journey of being the people of God sent in the world to be a blessing is indeed more like a marathon. It tests our stamina, our perseverance. Amidst the marathon, there are resting points. Abraham pitches a tent. He pauses to worship, building an altar, calling on the name of God for help. Then he continues on. As a church, we have our resting points. Here is worship. You come in where you pitch your tent, you build your altar, you create your worship group. By the way, these folks are great. I want to know when their first CD is coming out. That's how we build our altar today, right? We build a worship team. You built your altar. Your altar has shifted. You're a church on the move. Your altar was in a business complex, started at Los Altos. Now you're back here. Wherever you are, you build your altar. You pitch your tent. You call on the name of the Lord for help. And then you continue your journey on. Your journey, which is really out there, to be a blessing in the world to all peoples of the earth. Where do you see yourself in this passage today as we close? Are you being called to pitch your tent, to rest, and call on the name of the Lord for help? Are you in need of blessing of the Lord in the midst of hopelessness before you go out and be a blessing to others? Are you being called to be a conduit of the blessings you've received from God to others outside your people and clan? Are you called to leave the unfamiliar in your comfort zone and venture out into the world? Where are you in this passage today? Amen.